Tonight we're reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 38.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kachin, no, sorry, let's start. Text 38, chapter 6. Kachinnubhaya
vibrashtas.
Kachinnubhaya vibrashtas. Chinnabhram iva nashyate. Chinnabhram iva nashyati. Apratishto mahabaho. Apratishto mahabaho. Virudho brahmana pati. Virudho brahmana pati. Kachinnubhaya vibrashtas. Chinnabhram iva nashyati. Apratishto mahabaho. Vimudho brahmana pati.
Word for word. Oh no, sorry. Someone else.
Kachinnubhaya vibrashtas. Chinnabhram iva nashyati. Apratishto mahabaho. Vimudho brahmana pati. Kachinnubhaya vibrashtas. Chinnabhram iva nashyati. Apratishto mahabaho. Vimudho brahmana pati. Kachinnubhaya vibrashtas. Chinnabhram iva nashyati. Apratishto mahabaho. Vimudho brahmana pati.
Word for word. Kachchit. Whether. Na. Not. Ubhaya. Both. Vibrashtaha. Deviated from. Chinna. Torn. Abhram. Cloud. Iva. Like. Nashyati. Perishes. Apratishtaha. Without any position. Mahabaho. Almighty armed Krishna. Vimudaha. Bewildered. Brahmanaha. Of transcendence. Pati, on the path. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, ki. O mighty armed Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? Purport. There are two ways to progress. Those who are materialists have no interest in transcendence. Therefore, they are more interested in material advancement by economic development or in promotion to the higher planets by appropriate work. When one takes to the path of transcendence, one has to cease all material activities and sacrifice all forms of so-called material happiness. If the aspiring transcendentalist fails, then he apparently loses both ways. In other words, he can enjoy neither material happiness nor spiritual success. He has no position. He is like a riven cloud. A cloud in the sky sometimes deviates from a small cloud and joins a big one. But if it cannot join a big one, then it is blown away by the wind and becomes a non-entity in the vast sky. The Brahmana, Pati, is the path of transcendental realization through knowing oneself to be spiritual in essence, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, who is manifested as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Lord Sri Krishna is the fullest manifestation of the Supreme Absolute Truth, and therefore one who is surrendered to the Supreme Person is a successful transcendentalist. To reach this goal of life through Brahman and Paramatma realization takes many, many births, Bahunang Janmanan Ante. Therefore, the supermost path of transcendental realization is Bhakti Yoga, or Krishna consciousness, the direct method. Om Jnana Timrandas Yagi Nanjana Shalakya Chakshu Umnitam Yena Tazmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kinamaya Dirasyarvantikam. Translation one more time. O mighty armed Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? This is quite a popular verse, I think. I think many people remember this verse. It's a pretty significant doubt that Arjuna has, because often to advance in spiritual life, often you have to renounce progress in material life. And if you don't make it in spiritual life, and you've lost your material capital, then what do you have? This is something I think a lot of the second generation youth kind of possibly complained about. They were given all this spiritual education, they didn't quite get into it, and then when they wanted to experience the material world, they were hopeless. But it's usually not that bad, but it has happened. Like, my gurukul was not so prominent. It wasn't the best place to learn English. But in saying that, we also had good mathematics. So, you know, like, we were a little bit behind possibly in the educational standards of the outside world. But we had a spiritual basis for our education to some extent. And there was a big debate. There's always a debate with any gurukul, any school of spiritual knowledge, how much of which do you put into the education? How much do we saturate people with spiritual knowledge and separate them from this material world? And how much do we give them a material education in a beneficial environment of spiritual individuals? And I don't know if it's like a lose-lose situation or a win-win situation, but there's always some sacrifice. And I've seen gurukul's schools come and go based on these things. I've seen massive political things based on the standard of spiritual material education that people want for their children. Because, I mean, yeah, like it is saying here, if you don't really have all that it is spiritually, and you go out in the material world and you've got nothing materially, then you just kind of float about. And you can't really, you got enough spiritual knowledge, like we were told at least that you're not the body and that everything is temporary. So with that knowledge, you're kind of in a dangerous position because you don't really want to do anything. It's like, what's the point? So you're in this dangerous position that you don't really, you know not to, there's no need to progress materially, and you haven't been given enough sufficient knowledge to progress spiritually, seemingly. My advice is, if you are in this position, is to try to get out of it, get something going. But Krishna is going to tell Arjuna, obviously later, that actually any progress that you make on the spiritual path is permanent. And the material progress you make is temporary, as we were told. It's right. It does not last forever. It may last a lifetime, which does seem like a significant amount of time when you're in a lifetime, especially when you start to get, you know, beyond the irresponsible ages of childhood and teenage life. And, well, some people extend it till adult life until 30, 40. Yeah, depends how long you want to live with your parents and well, not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, like, depends how long you want to avoid taking any responsibility. So once you obviously take some responsibility, then material life hits you and then you really kind of know where you're at, materially speaking. And sometimes whether you're completely materially ahead and you have everything you supposedly need, your bank account is full and, you know, you've got good looks and all these six opulences that Krishna holds supremely, and you're trying to be a little Krishna, even then you see so many people either they're just not happy at all, or something really bad happens and they lose everything, they lose a fair amount of it. So, okay, so they were very advanced materially, not advanced spiritually, and they've got nothing to fall back on. At least the immature transcendentalist has something to fall back on. He has his basic training in this life and he has his pious credits or spiritual credits from many lifetimes. And he can always add to that. I think Prabhupada gave an example of a bank account. Which is right. Like you have a bank account that, I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you have a bank account that, you know, has high interest and one that has no interest, then you obviously invest in a high interest bank account. If you have a bank account that you can put money away in and you can spend that surplus anytime you want and it's automatically reimbursed as soon as you spend it, chances are you're going to invest in that bank. You might not trust that it's going to work out because it sounds really fishy, but if it's legitimate, you'll invest. But we're so used to superficial bank accounts where you spend it, you got to work for it again. You spend it, you got to work for it again. You spend it, you got to work for it again. And this sounds fair, I suppose. I think we kind of tell ourselves it's fair, you know. At least in Australia, it's like it's a culture that something is kind of, I mean, like unless you work hard, it's not worth it. Even if you're just working hard and not really getting anything, just the fact that you worked hard is something. But I don't know whichever culture I come from, but if you work hard, you had a hard day. You only work hard to, as we say, you work hard, you play hard. You only work hard to enjoy. That should be the only purpose of working hard. It shouldn't be so you feel like you really struggled. If people really attach their struggle, like really almost brag about how much they suffered in their life, like it's a medal on your chest. Look at me. I achieved suffering in this life. I've been beaten and bruised. What have you done? Of course, if you have a skillful fighter, he can go through many fights and he's never going to get any bruises. So it doesn't mean you're a winner. It just means you've experienced life. But spiritually speaking, okay, so you will still, as an immature transcendentalist, you will still feel the bruises and the batters of material life. You will still break your leg, Mark. It will happen. It's twisted. It hurts. You'll still feel some temporary miseries in this life and they will still hurt. But you will at least know that they're temporary and you will at least be able to understand that you're not the body, because if Mark had twisted his spiritual leg, then his playtime in Goloka Vrindavan would have been sorely ended and he would be in immense spiritual anxiety. It wouldn't make sense, actually. Maybe Leela, but yeah, you just, it's not convenient. It's like, why do it? Why have it? At least realize that it's not the case. And then once you realize that, you can free yourself a lot from these miseries. So that is the advantage. And even an immature transcendentalist can do this to some extent. We all, you know, when your life, you know, or when something really bad happens in your life and you're like, you're pushed off your feet and you just always like, oh, well, you know, it's material life. I was warned. At least you're warned, you know. Like a lot of people are so confused when when a big chunk of material misery comes their way and they're just so much more distraught because they're like, where did this come from? Why do I deserve, like, what's going on? This is not how it's supposed to work. I'm supposed to work hard and enjoy, or just work hard. They're expecting something good and they're not expecting anything bad. Okay, a little bit here and there, it's life. For them also, it's probably life, you know, c'est la vie. But it's not told to them in such a way that it's told to us. From the very beginning, you're told this is what you've got to expect. So, and you're not, you got to expect it if you want to try and enjoy this world, but there is something higher, people, come on. But, of course, we're talking about, you know, having the knowledge to realize that. And that's not just what Krishna's talking about here. I said it a little bit. He's not just talking about that we have the knowledge, even just to, like, say, an immature transcendentalist has a bit of knowledge to realize some things. So he gets a little bit more out of life. But he's talking about, okay, so you failed your miserable material life and you didn't get all the way to Krishna Prem. You weren't crying tears of ecstasy at every step and having fits of laughter on the floor. What is your fate? What will happen to you? And he says it. You end up being a Gurukul, he says. He says you come back in, you know, in a family of yogis or a family of Brahmins or a wealthy family, and you'll be given an opportunity to go at it again. I kind of look at this in a couple ways. So you have some good karma and you can burn it off, but if we take the example of a spiritual bank account, then realistically, whatever karma comes your way, good or bad, soon enough you should come to this position where you have another chance. It should come a lot sooner. Like sometimes a lot of people, I don't know if there's any quotes on it, but some people say, you know, you give someone prasadam and they're guaranteed a human birth after that. Or things like this, you know, like, because it's very scary that, you know, to fall from this human platform. And I don't know if anyone, when you're in the garden, if you want to really scare yourself, if you're into reincarnation, you believe in our philosophy of, you know, 8,400,000 species of life and so many yada yada births, you just go to a really nice garden, lovely garden, beautiful, you know, there's butterflies flying around, there's birds chirping, and then you just do a cell count. Call it the cell count. You just, you know, okay, so, you know, the smallest organism is, you know, bacteria and these little plant cells and things, and they have all different names and you can see them under a microscope. And you just kind of use your advanced mental speculation to picture how many billions of living entities there are in your little garden. And okay, you got an insect and you got this, but then I'm just talking about the, you know, the bacteria and these things. If you're lucky, from there you get up to these other things. It's kind of scary. It's really scary. If you mathematically calculate it, like we use 8,400,000 species, and that's kind of like, whoa, 8,400,000, that sounds like a lot, but it's kind of like a tangible number, you know what I mean? Like it sounds like you can, you know, it's like the anti-lottery. You can win it or you can lose it and you can survive. But that's just how many species there are. That's not how many lives you spend in these species. I mean, when I was on Polish tour, I think it was 2009, one of them, and there was one person amongst us who was robbing us, who was stealing from his fellow devotees, you know, petty cash, MP3 players, things. I think we found out who it was, and he was buying drugs or something. Obviously, was an immature transcendentalist, but don't worry, he's not fallen. But Indrajana Swami was very upset, obviously, because people were stealing things and devotees were becoming very anxious and feeling insecure and, you know, lack of you know, happiness because of it, you know, losing. I think I was also robbed. I think I lost 200, or else I just really misspent like crazy, but I lost a lot of money. And I couldn't calculate it with my receipts. So, and the person who we thought it was like hanging out with us all the time. Like he was in our crew of young people. Anyway, so Indrajana Swami can call a big meeting And he said, there's a thief among us. Says, and he's saying, we think we know who you are and all these things. And then he pulled the Manusamhita out. The Manusamhita is the laws of Manu. A lot of people don't like it. It's scary. It says a lot of things about everything, and it's kind of intense. But there's some kind of gravity and some kind of authority about it. But he read the punishment for stealing from a Vaishnava. I lost track at a thousand lives as a scorpion? Or is there was 1,000 lives and 3,000 lives, and one of them was for the scorpion and the other one was for the snake. And that was the biggest, like, ditch out of lives. But then it kind of, it was like a really, it was just like, no, stop, stop. And it just kept going. It was like this never-ending story. Anyway, so it's pretty heavy. Manusamhita is known for just dealing out really heavy karma. Yeah, but it's like, why do it? Why waste your chance while you're in this material, in this human form of life? And I say that in complete theory because I don't think I'm acting in such a way that I'm really holding on to my human form of life. Really not. I don't think many people are. I don't, like, it's really rare, is what I'm trying to say. And I've calculated it, but I haven't appreciated it enough. I have to keep saying it again because, yeah, I'm just really hoping on Lord Chaitanya's transcendental causeless mercy to save my butt, because there is nothing I've done in this life that guarantees me much more. You know, I haven't obviously been like a sinner. I haven't gone around punching people in the head, but, you know, like, I don't really look back on all these amazing things that I've done that have guaranteed me progress. So I'm really hoping on this, what Krishna is saying is that, don't worry, you kind of got somewhere, but we'll look after you from here. We'll at least sustain what you have, and you can go from there. Because otherwise this material world is really, really horrible. And this reminds me, in one of our recent courses, we did a course on the history of Vaishnava thought, which used to be called Vaishnava Charyas. Sorry, which is basically just a brief look into, well, more than a brief look into the Vaishnava commentaries and opinions in the Vedanta Sutra, which is, you know, Vedanta means end of all knowledge, end of Vedas. Sutras is like coded compression. So you've got like this MP3 version of the Vedas, which Vyasadeva has written. And it's just like, anyway, they're commenting on it. And there is this one text where all the acharyas, I think even Shankara, is saying how, Shankara is saying how Brahman is impartial. And then Ramanuja is saying how Brahman, for him as Vishnu, is impartial. Madhvacharya is saying Brahman is impartial. Baladeva Vijayabhushana just likes to stand out from the rest. And he's saying, they're saying the beautiful thing, the amazing, like, he's so, no, not beautiful, the might and supremacy of this impartial being, like, just see how amazing he is. He's so powerful, but he's impartial. And Baladev's like, well, the amazing thing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that he's partial. There's a whole verse where everyone's talking about the impartiality, and the sutras talk about the impartiality. And he's saying the wonderful thing about God is that he's partial to his devotees. And I'm like you hear, like, that's one of these contradicting elements. You always hear these, you know, these different praises of God for having this quality and this contradicting quality. And actually, that is really what really qualifies God, is he has many, there's one verse that says, God has many contradicting qualities. So this is one of them. And I was thinking, okay, that why does it make him wonderful? Obviously, we think, yes, because he's going to save our butts. And that's actually what it is. It's if he was completely impartial, by the mechanism of karma that we are under, we would get no relief. We would get material, temporary relief, but we would constantly go through and through and through. Like, once you get here, There's not a real big exit sign. There's not a real big exit, whether there's a sign or not. There's no way out. It's samsara. You constantly go around. So without the partiality, you can't actually get out of here. And that's why it's wonderful. Because if you didn't have partiality, then you would just be a sick sinister god that just puts you into a little washing machine and washes you around. That's really what's happening. Because there's no purpose to this world unless he's trying to teach us a lesson. I mean, we came here to learn a lesson. And once we're close enough to learning it, then he helps us out because it's good enough, you know, like, you know, sometimes a teacher will, you know, he wants you to get 100%, but most of the time they just want you to get a pass mark. They don't need to see, you know, A plus maximum. You know, we're getting bachelor's not because we're flawless students in the Bhaktivedanta College. It's because, you know, like, you can get a bachelor on a D mark. You can get one on a C mark. You'd hopefully want to get more, but, you know, you can get a pass grade. And this is a concession. And Prabhupada even, he said this one time, he said, How did he brought down the percentage? If you be, it was, you know, if you're 100% Krishna conscious, then you go back, and then they were like begging him no, and he was like bringing it down. Did he get the 50%? What was the, do you know? It's like, he was basically he was pulling a concession on the devotees, because they were just like, this philosophy is wonderful and true, but it is hard, and it's really hard to get to these. You read these people in the Bhagavatam, and you're just like, whoa. Even the ones that do crazy mad things are still like, whoa. So Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda was exemplary for bringing a concession in. You know, he wanted to liberate all the jugeyes and muddeyes, all the drunkards and rascals. Why not? Because he wanted to do this to praise Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya would get the credit. Somehow Nityananda gets the credit. Well, both of them get the credit. But he wanted, you know, like Patita Pavana, the savior of the most fallen, he wanted to prove it. And Narottam Das Thakur, he says in this famous song that we have, my name, I can't remember the name, but he says, Monsama Patita Prabhu na poibe aha. This line, or at least a line after it, one or the other, in the translation, he says, you are claiming to be Patita Pavana, the savior of the most fallen. Therefore, my claim is first. I should be liberated first. Get me out of here first, because I am the most fallen. And that's a cheeky thing to say, but actually he meant it. So he meant it, and that's what a pure devotee is. He meant that he was the most fallen, and he wasn't just like suffering from low self-esteem. He was doing things. He was a very active person. He was conquering the world for Krishna. And he was also a really good singer. You know, like, he wasn't just some guy who really was just materially failing. He was spiritually and materially up there. So, yeah, I mean, we need a concession. He was already liberated. We kind of need help. And, I mean, this verse is not saying it, but the verse is coming will say, yes, there is concession. You will not be neglected. You've made the initial investment for this path. This is enough to help you. Don't take advantage of it, please. Like me and many others. Try to get, you know, try to utilize it, because, okay, yes, you have the benefit that you're going to get out of here, but why stick around? You know, what's there to stick around for? We've looked, the reason why you got this far is because you had some realization that there's nothing to stick around for. So, you know, hold true. Why stick around? Don't act like a riven cloud. There's no such thing as it, but don't look like one, you know. Get out of here. Forgive me if I've missed anything or been a little bit crazy today, but in the Upanishads, there is a great example that this one sage, I would remember his name, but the example will explain why I don't remember his name. One sage starved his son for 15 days. And then told him to recite the Vedas. And his son forgot. And the sage then informed him that food creates the mind. So my excuse for today is that it's a fast day. So I tend to forget a lot of things. And it was very hard to read even. So Yeah, the first thing I learned from the Bhaktivedanta College before I came here was that. I was in Australia and one of the graduates, Patrick, he was in Australia for this Parliament of World Religions and I was fasting one ekadasi and I thought I was very special. And he said, "Why are you fasting? You will have no mind. You will not remember anything." And I was like, "Where's this from?" So it took me till the second year of Bhaktivedanta College to do my Vedas and Upanishads course, and then Gopinathacharya reads this section, and I was like, "Oh, this is where it's from." So I'm going to take some questions, comments, criticisms now. He's right. Yes, he's got. Sure. That's the best fast advice I've ever got. Okay. I've been trying.
The question I have is from the book of
sure.
He said there were two ways.
Two ways to progress.
Yeah, the one is the spiritual way, and the other one is the material way. And it says that, well, that's how it's interpreted. Is the way you take the spiritual way.
That's a very good point. And what you're saying is actually in the concluding chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's called Yukta Vairagya, which is basically utilizing material things in spiritual progress. So, and which is actually what the Bhagavad Gita is actually going to say in the end. Krishna's going to tell Arjuna that after all these things. You know, but I mean, mostly like, especially traditionally, but mostly like when you pick one, you tend to neglect the other. And the ones that go for, material, advancement, and even here it's saying trying to advance to heavenly planets, they're known as the karmis. Karma for action. And the jnanis, jnanis depends how you pronounce it, they live in the forest and they realize that they're not the body and they'll sit in seclusion because they know that everything material is false. So Arjuna was actually tempted to do that and Krishna said no. So in the end he actually says no, you have to do your material duty but you have to have a spiritual mindset. So that's the ultimate combination. And even so, that actually an immature person in spiritual life needs more to restrict himself because a mature person doesn't get bewildered. So, yeah, it's a good point, actually. That's, I mean, really, like, everything material can be used in Krishna's service for us, you know, like, everything is, in one sense, spiritual. So it just depends on your mentality of what you're using it for. If you try to lord over everything as God or as somewhat of a demigod or something or, you know, just an ego trip, then that's material. That's Maya, what we call illusion. And Maya is that which is not. And that which is not is that which is not connected to Krishna because everything is connected to Krishna. So nothing is really Maya. Therefore, the only thing that can be Maya is the concept that something is not connected to Krishna, which is usually in the spirit of us trying to be Krishna, us trying to be God. So yes, but ultimately, and I try very often, to use everything material in spiritual progress because sometimes it's a lot easier, you know, because, and that way you can also, I mean, this is actually the concept of the Varnashram system, which is, you start off as a brahmacharya, as a student, single student, and you learn all the knowledge in a renounced fashion because you're immature. And then when you're mature enough, then most people realize that they're still materially attached and then they will get married. And this is, and if they do it in a what you call it, the grihastha ashram, which is the ashram of the house, I suppose, the householder, if you do it in the spirit of spiritual advancement, as an ashram, as a house of spiritual progress, then you will benefit. And it's not to say that they, you know, that they're walking around in deer skin and bark and tree and eating berries and whatnot, which there is an example of that in the Bhagavatam, but it just means that they're not getting fully entangled in the material realm, but only as much as is needed for them to fulfill whatever residue desires that we have. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, yeah, like we say, don't become attached and don't over endeavor. And this is the main thing. The detachment is an internal thing, and the over endeavor is an external practice, which is also stems from internal ideals. But yeah, I mean, there's all room to get completely bewildered by this material energy. But a lot of people, when they try to renounce everything, the thing is, your desires in your heart, they will show, they will come out. So if you try to suppress them, they kind of come out a funny way, you know, like you hold them here and this. And that's what happened to a lot of our devotees who really went straight down the renunciation path. And not just us, you know, Buddhists, Mayavadis, Shaivas, anyone spiritual, Christians, Catholics, when they suppress themselves, then they come out. You know, that's why you've got so many crazy sexual scandals in every single religious institution, and everyone's criticizing the bag out of them, because it's usually due to false renunciation. But if you can curtail things in a more appropriate way, and just take what you need from this material world, with the goal in mind that it's not there, it's not the permanent goal, then you can eventually kind of weave your way out of this. But then also the danger is always there, and you have to always be aware of it, because there is always the option to overindulge and get completely lost in things. Yeah, sorry. Kuva?
I was actually mostly joking with that.
Okay.
But it is a very interesting subject.
Yeah.
Certainly, I've experienced in my life, right, get all into Krishna consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden, all the vitality and joy in my life, at one point, like I get dry.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I neither am enjoying material world, nor am I tasting anything
mm-hmm.
spiritual. And even like often living in a temple, you're in the ashram, but then you lose touch with the ashraya, like that feeling of I'm sheltered by the Lord, and it's like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's really start getting very human, and the experience that I'm involved in something transcendental, or like there's a Krishna, there's a few person who's involved in everything, and you have to start being about all of the management, so.
Familiarity breeds contempt.
How does one keep the eye on the wall and,
Well, you're not asking that. I was taking a walk with Mahalakshmi recently, and I was like, I'm feeling, you know, really this and this and that. And she's like, well, you're at a recognized stage of anishta, not fixed. Don't worry. This is recognized by all the scriptures as a definite phase of life that you will go through in spiritual advancement, where you are... You know, you're engaged in some devotional activities, but you're still not getting there. I think the thing you gotta watch out for, like, is Vaishnava Aparad. It's a real taste killer. And that's what usually happens when you get, like, familiarity breeds contempt. Krishna set that example quite massively with his own family members. when they were joking around with the sages, and it was a pretty good joke actually. It was like you kind of feel like, well, these sages are a bit hard on them. I mean, you know, as Krishna's arranged it, you know, they played a little joke. You know, he was pretending to be pregnant, but then I was like, whatever. But you know, Krishna showed is like, no, you cannot disrespect Vaishnavas. It is so heavy. And Prabhupada mentioned it, so many pastimes, you know, you have Daksha and Shiva, and it's like so many different pastimes where Krishna is, and Prabhupada and the Bhagavatam are mentioning this. At least that, then you don't like knock yourself off track, and then it's just, you just gotta, I often try to just remember it, like try to keep it, write something down that really kind of reminds you that you're trying to go back to Godhead. And I don't know about like continual things, that's the thing is, unless you are experiencing higher tastes, and if you do the same thing every day, then you will feel that you are doing the same thing every day. And you will get sick of it. So you have to, I don't know, you have to somehow get your spontaneity in. I know from experience in my life that reading helps a lot when you read the scriptures, because like it's kind of changing, you know what I mean? Like just the format itself is, it's going through different sub, it's something fresh every day. What to speak of the fact that when you read it again, something new comes out of it. That really helps. If you have a taste for the holy name, that helps. I don't know what that feels like. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to weigh it up, you know what I mean? And no, I think when you weigh it up though, don't do it in, how to say, like I'm going to go to hell kind of way, you know, fearful way. But it is good to have a little healthy amount of fear for what the material energy can bring. But then you also, what I did was I assessed my situation too. It was like, I decided it's time to get married. You know, like you have to find what's comfortable, because some people it's like, they got to go and be renounced and or be, you know, fully. Some people need more service. Some people need less service. Some people need more responsibility. Some people need less responsibility. This is Varnashram. You know, that's what it is. It's fine. You know, until you fully get to where you have to be, then you have to have a Varnashram system.
Yes,
sure.
With Varnashram, like, where is that balance of individual self-expression and like being part of this? That tends to be one of the areas.
Always, yeah.
Outside of what fits nicely into the cupboards in the ashram kind of thing, or even like the yogi community, gets nipped off, and then.
Well, yeah.
You know, how much do we have room for individual self-expression and being like stinted or loonies on our own, you know, like figuring it out, and then how much?
I think you touched a good point there. Accidentally, is we mix our Varnashram with our temple management. Or any, like, Varnashram definitely has some management in it. Varnashram, we always see it, it's like, you are boxed, you are grouped, you are repressed or something. What is it? Like, you're in this. But Varnashram is really about, here is you. This is where you are. Go for it. Be you as much as you can. That's really what I like, looking into Varnashram as much as I could. It's about being you as much as possible in a constructive way to the community. Not that you are a serial killer, go kill. No, it's like, it has to be like, you know, you're an artist, be artistic. You are a manager, manage things. You are a worker, work. You are a scholar, study. This is what we are. This is known as Varna Shankara, which is everyone in Kali Yuga. Bhaktivedanta Punaswamy said, he's like, find out the one you are the most, and that will be your Varna. But I think it's like, you know, if you're 50-50, do 50-50. If you're 80-20, do 80-20. And like, if you're mostly artistic, then paint a lot, you know, but then if you need to go work a hard day in the field, or if you need to study some scripture, obviously spiritual things, everyone can do. You know, a Brahmin can still clean the kitchen or the toilets or whatever of the temple. Maybe he can't do it every day. Maybe it freaks him out a little bit. But he can do it once a week. You know, you can do, I found out you can do virtually anything once a week. you know, so if it's Krishna conscious, so, you know, like any Shudra can pick up a Bhagavad Gita, you can't just go, oh, I'm a Shudra, I'm never going to read one verse. You know, and any Brahmin can do some dirty work. But yeah, if you're right now, we've got a mixed situation. So then I think we've got such a little amount of structure that perhaps there's some freedom that you can kind of mix it around, you know. I feel everyone has the mix now, and then you have to work towards it. Obviously, if you don't have much of a mix of a leading figure and you don't have much of a skill for it, then avoid it. You might have 5% in there somewhere, but, you know, do what you need, you know. And pray that you have a good authority, a good managerial system in your local precinct that you can do that. Because if you go around telling them that Madhavendrapuri told you to do whatever you want, then get in trouble. But yeah. Tell me to be what I want to be. It's so funny though, like you see, it's like in Hollywood and it's in all the novels, as this dream of just being what you want to be. And it was so refreshing to finally realize that our scripture actually ordains it. It's like this dream, like it becomes a pipe dream almost for everyone that they want to. I mean, yeah, it's like, that's what Krishna does, you know, he just sits around in Yamuna and hangs out with his friends. That's what he wants to do. He's God. So, I'm not advocating irresponsibility, but yeah, just be yourself. And that's ultimately what our philosophy is learning who we are to be more ourself. It's nothing more than that, really. Marcus? Oh, yes. Well, the person who was accused eventually got drunk and tried to knife someone, so... After that person was removed from the tour, then eventually, or straight away, the theft magically stopped. So I'm just, you know, putting two and two together. What was scary about that year was that someone tipped off the police that the devotees had drugs, which was wrong. But I'm wondering if it was because of this individual, because he probably did have drugs. And we got raided. We were assembled at 8 or 9 in the morning, which is really early for Polish tour. Were you there that year? We were rummaged into a gymnasium, which was our temple, and we were passport scanned, and a sniffer dog went through everything. So, you know, some things can happen to transcendentalists. That was the point of the class. But yeah. It was kind of really heavy until someone started leading the Sringa prayers. And then all the policemen kind of quivered and realized that they were at our mercy. Because although they had submachine guns, we had a Sringa Dave and 300 angry Ukrainians, which is a formidable fight. Anyway, yeah, it was an interesting tour. Do it. I've done 7 tours with Indrajima Swami and I'm regretting that I'm not doing the next one. Do it at least once. Get raided by the police at least once. No, most of them are quite smooth. Yeah. It was fun. I had the pleasure that I got to. Did you read that one, Srimati Mataji? No, I wrote that. Yeah, that I got the pleasure of writing about the whole thing and publishing it on the internet. It was quite, yeah, that for me is one of the unforgettable moments, Polish tour. Okay, anything else? Are we cutting into bhajan time? Okay, Grandraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki.
Fasting is not good.
Oh my gosh. I'm totally like the fish on dry land.
Yeah, I can't do the movie. class.